Welcome to Truth Jihad Radio, the all-out struggle for truth disguised as an internet radio show. I'm Kevin Barrett, bringing you the greatest guests, telling you all sorts of interesting bits of information that aren't likely to be prominently displayed in the corporate mainstream store window. Today, we're going to move over to a topic that I've touched on a little bit, sort of around the edges, but not so much really, but it could be really, really important, and that's what we try to do here at Truth Jihad Radio, is look at precisely those topics that, if you multiply the importance, if they were true, by the probability that they are true, they get a very high number. And it's got a very, very interesting set of consequences. If this is true, we're talking about revising scientific approaches to the world in ways that affect our actual lives. My guest is Ben Davidson. He's with suspiciousobservers.org. He's got a mobile observatory project looking up at the heavens and saying that conventional astronomy, astrophysics, and so on is missing something. Are we ready for a big paradigm shift? Let's find out. Hey, welcome, Ben Davidson. How are you?
It is. It's good to be here this morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, I really enjoy the description sort of how you've become a kind of a freelance scientist. I've become a freelance humanist after being drummed out of the universities for looking into what really happened on 9/11. And it looks like you're kind of doing the same thing with science and taking it mobile. You got a mobile observatory. Tell me how you got started on this project.
Well, long story short, I started off after high school in the sciences and taking meteorology classes. I wanted to be the weatherman. And after a couple of weeks of meteorology classes, I figured out where that stereotype came from that, you know, oh, the weatherman never gets anything right. That's not exactly a fair statement about weathermen, but there's some truth to the stereotype. And it's because they don't use electricity at all. They know that lightning has to do with electricity, but that's about all the room they have for it. None of the magnetic fields or the electric currents in the atmosphere are considered connections with the ionosphere, and these things are all very, very easy information to gather. And so I kept having arguments with my professors, and finally they suggested I find a different major. I did.
Electric universe studies?
A little bit, yeah, a little bit. Although they need to be definitely differentiated from what used to be known as the electric universe studies, because these are really newer, revised theories, and they're not really plugging the same old ones, which is a common point of confusion. But essentially, I did find another major in a different university. I ended up graduating with a degree in economics. I went to law school and graduated with my Juris Doctorate. But partway through law school, I realized I didn't want to be a lawyer. And so the only other thing a lawyer is really trained to do is research. Mm-hmm. We're basically just professional research rats. But we are that, because nobody can memorize every law. What they really teach you to do is take a very complex question, oftentimes requiring elements of predictive analyses. And you have to go search for this information wherever it may be found in a bunch of different places. And the answers are always either written as, you know, in law form, which is never easy to read, or they're written by judges who like to be verbose and are complex by nature. And then you have to put all that together where the information conflicts. You have to make judgment calls about that. And then you have to be able to communicate your results back to people. Well, when I got interested in the alternative news community, the conspiracies, you know, Earth changes, all the stuff that people watch on YouTube and listen to online and stuff like that, I realized very quickly that, one, the community was polluted by a lot of bad information, and it was really making a lot of the people doing good work seem crazy in the eyes of the mainstream, because they just get lumped in with all the other noise that's around them.
And you always wonder how much of that is by design and how much is just kind of natural.
Absolutely. Believe it or not, it's easy to control the masses, the sheeple. It's very difficult to control us. And one of the ways they do that is by not necessarily controlling us, but controlling the way we are perceived by the rest of the world. But anyway, I don't necessarily want to get into that topic. That's something I think everybody listening to this kind of basically understands. Essentially, I realized that okay, that's what a lawyer's trained to do. What am I supposed to be doing if I'm not going to be a lawyer? Well, I went into due diligence analytics for an equity firm. It wasn't a terrible job, but at essence, I was just making rich people richer. But in a helpful way, it was.
Aren't we all?
Yeah. In a helpful way, it was good because when you're doing due diligence for equity investments, you have to look at things from an interdisciplinary standpoint. You have to look at the economics, the legal side, and then you have to be an expert in whatever it is you're investing in, whether that's mining or pharmaceuticals or some kind of technology. And that's really where I got back into the sciences after having left them when it was suggested I do so for questioning the meteorology professors. And so I got back into the sciences right around the same time I was getting into this community. And after about a month of being frustrated at not being able to find good information, finding some good information, but having it not really well cited and being, you know, not really able to trace it back and dig my own rabbit hole and learn more about the topic, I decided that, wait a minute, I'm just going to bring my skills that I was trained for to this community. And as a hobby, I started the YouTube channel back in 2011, and it's really just now a passion for me. We haven't taken a day off from doing the daily news since 2011. That includes weekends and holidays, the day after I got married, Christmas, the day my daughter was born 13 days ago.
Congratulations.
I'm very ecstatic, but it's just a love for doing this. And it stems from that a little piece of anger that I'm, you know, never going to let go inside of me. Much of the rebellious, half hippie, the world has gone to hell and let's change something attitude that I had when I was 20 has exchanged some of the, you know, rage and want to go out and, you know, march down the streets attitude for a bit more reason and logic. But I never really let it go. And once you kind of have the wake up process and you see everything that's going on, you can never let it go. But, you know, where I have chosen to focus in this arena is on the way that Earth and Sun and the universe behaves, because we're missing an enormous part of it. And also how this behavior is affecting things like climate change and how it's affecting the magnetism of our planet and indeed the entire solar system. And these are some very important topics that are not going to be able to be ignored for much longer by the mainstream, even though they don't really deny any of these things. This is the interesting part of this conspiracy, or I don't know if that's really the right word for it, but all the information is out there and put out there by our governments. And it's just not really talked about. It was sort of reported as being true. And so they've given us all the information. It's just that now there's not really a want to direct a lot of attention towards it.
Well, let's stop and talk a little bit about a couple of specifics that show that there is, you know, this new paradigm coming on. For instance, the claim that the Earth's electromagnetic field, and influenced by space weather, by the sun, this kind of electromagnetic phenomena that we're bathed in, is influencing extreme weather events and earthquakes on Earth. That's been a hot topic, and I believe there's some research that shows that indeed it does.
Absolutely. There have, for a couple of decades now, been some scientists who attempted to show a correlation between solar phenomena and earthquakes simply by just sort of saying, hey, this event happened this day, and then this earthquake happened, and then listing a bunch of like things like that, and then saying, this really looks like a pattern, doesn't it? But there had never been really a proper statistical analysis done of the situation. And the most thorough and what I thought was a good candidate for being an earthquake factor on the sun was actually the sun's version of what we have on Earth, a magnetosphere, the magnetic field that wraps around the planet. Just like on Earth, how the polar regions of Earth have this magnetic field that comes out of it and wraps around the planet. I mean, just picture like it happens with a bar magnet. We know that the fields come out of the top and bottom and wrap around. Well, just replace the bar with a sphere, Earth, and that's what we have. It's called a sphere magnet. Well, the sun has this too, coming out of its north and south poles, called the polar magnetic fields of the sun. And these actually extend all the way out past Pluto. So these certainly interact with all of the planets. And in order to do a proper statistical analysis, which I am not trained to do, I hired the statistical consulting service from the Ohio State University, comprised of their statistics professors and select graduate students in that program. And I basically gave them the data set that has been kept quite thoroughly since the mid-1970s by Stanford University on the solar polar field data. And I said, and I also gave them the list of large earthquakes from the United States Geological Service, the USGS, and I told them to run a dependence analysis. Are these earthquakes dependent on solar phenomena related to the solar polar magnetic fields? And the answer is a resounding yes.
So here you're looking for causality and, you know, not just connections, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And so these super powerful fields that extend all the way out past Pluto and which interact with every planet, it turns out that when they are at their peaks of force, of magnetism, when they're most magnetic, and when they are reversing polarity, positive to negative, negative to positive, whichever, those are the times when we get the 8-magnitude earthquakes and higher. And there's when you do an analysis like this, there's always a confidence value, a p-value that is associated with it. And if your p-value per se, which by the way, lower is better, if it is 0.5, you are considered to have a 95% confidence. If it is 0.1, you are considered to have a 99% confidence. If it is 0.01, you basically get where I'm going with this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I didn't take a whole lot of statistics classes, so I have that general idea, but not the details.
our p-value has 4 zeros before a 2 and an 8. It is 0.00008. There's about a 1 in 100,000 chance that we got this result by error. And so this is just one of about 8 different solar phenomena that we're eventually going to go through, but this thing kind of chugs along at a snail's pace, and we're just getting started in this. It's baby steps, and that was the first analysis.
So has the mainstream reacted to this in any way?
No, not yet. The analysis was completed about a year ago, and then we had to work on getting, you know, some good charts and some good data and getting the final write-up from the statisticians. And it was late last year that we finally got the paper, you know, essentially put together. And then it was pretty much at the beginning of 2015 that we finally submitted the paper. And it could take another couple of weeks to months maybe before all, you know, there's the final approval of the manuscript and everything. But essentially, this process started when I noticed the correlation on January 1st, 2014. It was about 40 days later that I took the data sets to Ohio State. And so these are really the timelines on which these things work. And it's frustrating to sit there and wait through it, but this is what has to be done in order for science to actually recognize these things and want to push them forward. But anyway, the earthquake phenomenon is really it's something that's fascinating, and it's very cool, and it's probably the most imminently exciting thing that we do, especially because we are pretty much able to week by week track the ebb and flow of upticks and downturns in global seismicity. You know, is it a large earthquake day or is it a light earthquake day? Usually, we're able to pick those out. But in terms of things that are most important, the absolutely most important things. We have a cosmic coincidence going on right now that is got to be unlike anything that's ever happened at least in this part of the universe. The sun is on a approximately 400-year cycle. We have evidence that one actually took about 650 years. Another one was as little as about 325, but most of them are around 400, and that's the average. And this is called the grand solar cycle. It starts with a period of very, very low activity, and then it rises up to what we call a grand maximum, a very, very high activity. And then it drops back down very quickly. Well, the last mini ice age, we're not talking about a full glacial period on this planet, but the last mini ice age was really at its worst during the last solar grand minimum 400 years ago. After that point, the sun began increasing in activity. And from about the year 1900 to the 1990s, the sun was at its peak of activity, not just in this 400-year solar cycle, but for the last 9,000 years that we can reconstruct from ice cores and tree rings and other things like that. And that period that is the highest solar activity of the last 9,000 years happens to be the period of global warming. Now, people have heard about the great global warming pause. Some folks argue that it doesn't exist. Most scientists acknowledge it, although there's still some disagreement about what it means for the future.
Yes, yeah, so some argue that it's actually the oceans absorbing the heat that has caused the pause.
Right, and there was actually there's actually a study, you'll have to pardon my click for a moment. I think that your folks will understand.
Oh yeah, they're used to clicks. We click right on this show sometimes.
This paper is called "On the Accuracy of North Atlantic Temperature and Heat Storage Fields from Argo." It was published back in 2007, and it has gotten no play whatsoever. It's only been cited 9 times in the last 8 years. And essentially, this shows that there was up to a massive, up to a 2 degrees Celsius error in the estimation of the ocean heat. Essentially, the way they do this is with buoys, and you know, they take it at sea level, they take it a little bit below sea level, it's at different times of day, it doesn't take account for swirling eddies, and they basically, when they did this analysis, they basically just took all the highest values they could, put them together, and said the heat went into the ocean. But anyway, the point that I'm really trying to make is not about, you know, arguing about what's going to happen. Let's look at what has happened. The point at which is generally agreed upon as being the start of the global warming pause came just a matter of months after the middle of the 1990s that I alluded to a moment ago. That was the end of that period of extremely high solar activity. Now, granted, for the next 11 years, the next miniature solar cycle, the sun was still able to produce sunspots. The sun was still able to produce large flares, but the magnetic field strength began dropping precipitously. And now, in this solar cycle, we are seeing that the sun is very weak. This is one of the weakest solar cycles we have ever observed, definitely the deepest and lowest solar cycle of the space age. And most indications are that this is just the beginning, that it's going down into another grand minimum period. Every 400 years in the past, we see this great change, and it appears to be driven by the sun. People may have noticed that the carbon-driven temperature data correlation never goes back before 1880, and that's because before then, the charts don't really make a lot of sense. If they actually extended it back even just to the year 1600, when the last solar grand minimum existed during the last mini ice age, the carbon dioxide and the temperature lines would be way, way off and skewed. So that's why they cut it off at 1880. It's to sell. It's to sell the story,
But wait a minute. I thought they go all the way back, you know, eons back with the ice core samples and things like that.
Well, that's the issue. The CO2 and temperature lines appear to be perfectly correlated until the Industrial Revolution. At that point, they break apart in a very, very fast rate, and literally the only thing they have in common is that they have both gone up since the Industrial Revolution. It was literally like, imagine two lines hugging each other, and then as they're on their crest back upwards, they break off and kind of go in two different directions, but one is shooting straight up and one is just kind of climbing up slowly. That's what we've seen. There was a perfect correlation. And in fact, if you look closely, the CO2 actually appears to trail temperature readings, not the other way around.
And that's explained by the conventional people as a result of the kind of feedback loops. And everybody admits that it's not the CO2 directly that causes the warming. There's a series of feedback loops right. that get set in motion.
Right. But anyway, the point is that the further you look back in time, the less and less human activity appears to be correlated with temperature. But if you look back in time over what the sun has been doing, it really does appear to match up much better. Now, why is this important? And does this mean I get to pollute and all these people worried about climate change are crazy? No, this is a very serious event, and I want a clean planet, as I'm sure you and your children and our children's children do. I mean,
yeah, and let me just throw out a possible interpretation of all of this that would fit with your research and perhaps also with the mainstream alarmists on climate change, which would be that the sun could be kind of the principal driver that then sets in motion a series of feedback loops that involve CO2, and which then, you know, brings in water, water vapor into the atmosphere. So even though the driver normally would be the sun, the increased CO2 would have a large responsibility for the resulting temperature increase. And therefore, like today, even if the sun is going towards a minimum with this massive CO2 output from humans, you could still get tremendous warming.
Well, see, the issue is what they call tremendous warming is still less than half a degree Celsius. And what we are seeing all over the world is 320 days a year of being 0.1, 0.2, 0.3, 0.7 degrees Celsius above normal, and then being 20 to 30 to 40 degrees below normal for those other days. In the United States, more people die of cold-related natural disasters than any other natural disaster every year. That is true in just about every, in just about the entire developed Western world. Granted, in places like the Philippines, that natural disaster is typhoons. That's true of Guam as well. In India, it is drought, heat waves, and flooding.
Right, but, and the conventional global warming science predicts all of that, including the extra cold temperatures as a result of their climate change.
Yes and no. Some folks have said that, but the majority have said that, no, we're about to see the end of snow. We're about to see the end of polar ice. There will be no more cold records broken. And since 2012, there have been more cold records broken on this planet than heat records. That is a simple fact. That's one of the things I track and show the data for every day. In fact, one of the funniest things we do is every time NOAA or one other group like that puts out some kind of headline about it being the hottest this or the hottest that, we go in and show the actual data. This is the difference between doing your homework and just relying on a headline. They will put a headline that says hottest April ever, and you go in and you see that cold records dominated, that it wasn't even close. And essentially, if you were to take out the first 100 miles off the coastline, from the southern point of California up to Alaska, you would basically have a trend of decreasing temperatures on the planet like you couldn't imagine. There's literally one part of the world that, due to how the planet is changing electrically, the pressure systems are basically just bringing the heat up the coastline from the equator nonstop. But other than that, yeah, okay, it's a little warmer in Siberia. It's generally very, very warm now in Australia and parts like that in the summertime. But other than that, it is honestly a cold-dominated event. Now, here's something interesting. This is the kind of thing that in the past, every time this happens, there is a count of crazy, crazy weather disasters. And these are the types of events that our ancestors, these diligent mathematicians and astronomers and architects who we marvel at now, Those same people made up stories of jealous, living gods who were angry at the people and created all these weather disasters. Why? Because they didn't have any other explanation. It was something they had never seen before. The world had lulled them into a normalcy bias and lulled them to sleep, and they thought stuff like this couldn't happen. When in reality, things can go south really quickly, and it has nothing to do with anything other than what nature's cycle is doing.
So for the solar minimum, which happened 400 years ago, is there a record of these extreme weather events and disasters then, around 1600?
Absolutely.
I know there's a little ice age, but I didn't know that there were, you know, storms and typhoons and earthquakes.
More people died of famine and drought during that period of time than have died since then. Just that little 50-year period, then have died since then. And since then, we had the Irish potato famine. During the grand solar minimum, 2 million people died in India in two separate events. There were areas of Europe where more than 50% of some nations died.
Now, which years are we talking about?
We're talking about the years of the last grand solar
minimum. Specifically, which years, though? 1600 to 1650? Or
It was... the early 1600s to the it really ended, if you want to extend it out, to the early 1700s, but the heart of it was right in the middle.
There's so basically the 17th century.
Essentially, yeah. I have a video called The Coming Solar Cycles, and even though we give all the information about where the sun is trending towards, the video is really about what happened in the past ones and maybe looking at what would happen if we had to deal with these things again today. We're talking about, you know, in places in the United States where you usually see really hot temperatures in the summer, you still will. It's just that you may see a June snowstorm as well. Good luck with your crops that year. And I don't just mean good luck in your town with crops that year. I mean the year we get one June snowstorm, literally entire regions of the country will not grow a crop that year.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. The people on the East Coast, the Boston area, might relate to this. This year, there were tons of snowstorms, and including pretty late ones. Here in the heartland of Wisconsin, I really can't yet because we haven't really seen that yet.
You guys are actually in a good spot right here. The normal Arctic flow that would be coming down over Montana and Minnesota and you guys has shifted east a little bit over the last few years, and it's really taking on Michigan and New England a lot more. But consider this: if you took all of the snow that Boston got this year, that dropped in one night in Italy this year, 100 inches in one night.
Yeah, that's mind-boggling, isn't it?
The cold extreme are just as important as the super typhoons that are happening. And in terms of the heat, the actual consequences of having a warmer temperature is more farmland in Canada and Russia and less of a reliance on Monsanto's genetically modified disasters of a food source. That's really the only consequence of global warming. We should really be so lucky. But, you know, Earth is actually changing less than most of the other planets in the solar system. This is the smoking gun right here, that it is the sun triggering this. Just as the sun has begun to lose its energy like crazy, the planets have begun juicing up. You know, I'll actually start here at Earth. Earth's ionosphere is way out of control. Its critical frequency is more than double what it should be, and there's no way to have that caused by CO2. The top of Earth's atmosphere is actually collapsing and has been collapsing for quite some time now. The upper atmosphere position is completely determined by solar flaring activity, and the solar flaring activity has been very low, and so we're having upper atmospheric collapse as well. We are seeing higher high-pressure systems and lower low-pressure systems, and we're seeing more interaction between the two. Essentially, this means that we're seeing climate extremes, extreme swings in both directions. You might remember a couple weeks ago, it was 90 degrees on the eastern side of a low-pressure system sweeping across the country. It dropped tornadoes on its convergence line right in the middle, and then it dropped 2 feet of snow in South Dakota on the western side. We're really lucky this didn't happen in January. But this is the kind of thing where these are getting stronger, and eventually it's going to be the kind of thing where it's 100 to 110 degrees on the eastern side. There's going to be an outbreak of 400 tornadoes on the convergence line in the middle, and all of them are going to be F3 or higher. And then it's going to get below freezing on the backside all the way down to Texas, and there's going to be snow in June from northern Texas all the way to Canada.
That doesn't sound like a very good weather forecast.
No, that is what we're on the road to seeing, and that is not part of the global warming.
Yeah, let me go back to the issue of the other planets also having right. these extremes. You typically hear the side that, you know, skeptical side about global warming saying that the planets are also warming up. I mean, but what you're saying is that we passed the solar maximum in about 95. And basically everybody is either cooling down, or you're saying that the planets
they're all juicing up.
So when the solar activity drops, the planets' own fields get stronger?
I'm not exactly sure why it's happening, but essentially, if you could think of the entire solar system almost like a magnet motor, we have the central node there, and then we have all these sphere magnets circling around it. This is an electrical system. I mean, the solar wind creates an electric field and a magnetic field. The polar fields that I mentioned before about with the earthquakes, those travel out and interact with all the planets. There are other interplanetary magnetic fields that stream out from the sun. Every planet has a magnetic connection back to the sun, which NASA calls a magnetic portal, which I wish they hadn't. It makes me think of something science fiction, but it's a very, very real thing. There is nothing but electricity and magnetism in this solar system, and all of these things are connected. You cannot have something affecting one sphere without it affecting another sphere. We all act like tuning forks. What happens when you put two tuning forks together and you ring one? The other one starts singing. Mm-hmm. And so there is this connection between all of them. And let me just run through some of this juicing up effect. I've talked about what it's doing on Earth, and one of the most important effects was what I mentioned about the ionosphere, the critical frequency. Earth is electrically out of control. On Venus, the fastest winds are now 33% faster than they were. On Earth, that number is about 3 or 4%. Venus is changing so much that its rotation speed is changing. Its day is a little longer. Mars was heating up faster than Earth was heating up during the period of global warming, and it appears that there's now some pretty impressive shifts going on there as well, although
they've got their own pause.
Yeah, it's kind of difficult to say whether or not it's a full pause or whether now there's heat accompanied by storm activity, but essentially Mars is changing more than Earth is as well. Jupiter's great red spot is dying. Red Jr. was born. It lost an entire planetary stripe, and the planet changed energetically so much that its radio output changed. We had long thought that these things were relatively constant. I mean, they ebb and flow over time, but they don't usually break from their patterns. Well, King Zeus just started singing a completely different tune. That's an energetic change. And then we move on to Saturn. You know, as long as we've been able to see Saturn in telescopes, so we're talking a long, long time, we have noticed a superstorm develop on Saturn every 30 years. It's when Saturn is closest to the sun. You know, Saturn's orbit is not a perfect circle. And so it has a point in its orbit when it's closer to the sun than at any other point. It just so happens that at that point every 30 years, which is its orbital time, it has this superstorm that crops up on the sun, on the northern hemisphere, lasts a few weeks, is always about the same size, and then goes away. Well, it just arrived 10 years early, right at the time the sun was really beginning to plummet in its activity. It was twice as big as they thought it was going to last and lasted about five times as long. If this were to happen on Earth, it would be like a Category 6 or 7 hurricane striking the United States on January 1st when it has no business being there, and it lasting through April. Oh, you better believe Saturn is changing more than Earth is. Oh, and it is also changing its rotation speed. Its day is now no longer the same time as it was.
So overall, the other planets sound like they're changing actually more than Earth, and I suppose that might be because of a certain kind of equilibrium, the negative feedback cycles of life on Earth with, you know, life and the carbon cycle.
Well,
and so
I tend to blame life, but I blame life in a different way. And by the way, I don't need to run down Uranus, but Uranus is changing more than Earth is too. In fact, we just witnessed the strongest storm we've ever seen on that planet. But yeah, humans are the reason why the Earth is not doing as bad yet. And I have
So the extra carbon in the atmosphere is actually ameliorating the bad effects that we would otherwise be experiencing?
No, there's a little thing called weather modification. And despite all of the terrible information that is out there, there's a lot of really, really dumb people saying some really idiotic things, possibly for the purpose of discrediting everybody who notices it. But weather modification is absolutely a real thing. And the people in charge of it are the people who have been in charge of running and winning this game on Earth for quite a long time. I don't know who they are. It is just they, and the programs are real.
Okay, are we talking about HAARP-type programs?
We're not talking about HAARP. HAARP's one of the things that they use to really make us look foolish. I mean, just think about this. HAARP was a secret for well over a decade, the kind of thing where if you knew about it and you talked, you might not live very much longer.
Wait, which decade was that? So I've been talking about it for, I think, even before 9/11.
Yeah, well, the 1998 HAARP and NEXRAD hoax was when it really came into the public eye.
But I think I heard of it before that.
Well, it was a secret during the 70s and during the 80s. And then all of a sudden, there's all these books, all these TV shows, and Jesse Ventura, the actor slash politician, the two people our community does not trust, handing us an enemy on a silver platter and telling us to go scream about it on the internet. Boy, if that's not a limited hangout distraction, those things don't exist.
Well, they supposedly shut down HAARP now, and well, everybody assumes that there's a substitute. You know, what they're really doing is using something other than HAARP, but yeah, we don't know what that is.
Except the problem is that the science behind what these people are saying doesn't hold weight.
So wait a minute, cooking the ionosphere, heating the ionosphere wouldn't work?
It will not. You cannot create a tornado or a hurricane, and you cannot move a hurricane around the globe at will by heating the ionosphere. You can move high pressure systems a bit, you can change the temperature a bit, but tornadoes can unleash more energy than a nuclear bomb. And the put it this way, the best, the most efficient, most effective form of weather modification we have is cloud seeding. And we still kind of suck at that. We're only about 50% effective on that. The stories of what this technology may one day be able to do versus what they're capable of doing now, there's an enormous gulf between them. And given all of the ways that we have to watch the sky and the ionosphere, we'd catch them doing anything major, damaging in a big way.
Interesting, because the Pentagon has that document saying they're going to own the weather by 2020. And when I was in Iran recently, I had a fascinating conversation with I think he was a graduate student who apparently had some kind of security role, because I met him in the place in the airport where the important people avoid all customs and everything, which the Iranians were nice enough to put me through. So I met this guy, had this fascinating conversation in which he described actually working on an Iranian program in which he thinks that Iran is going to succeed in overcoming some of its neighbors' weather control technology. He says all of these countries in that region, and especially sort of east of Iran, are fighting over the rainfall. And
there is a lot of grandstanding, and there's a lot of that going on. But when it comes to rainfall, that's all about, you know, pushing pressure systems a little bit and trying to get the rain to fall when it comes. And here's the thing where I think we may have had a miscommunication. Like I said, I believe that this stuff is real and that it is being used. It's just that what our community is attacking and the way that we're talking about it, we've been going about it the wrong way. Are you meaning to tell me that Earth is avoiding this entire solar system shift and humans trying to mess it up? Ooh, that would be a heck of a trick for our planet. Methinks something else is going on here. When you look at what happened during the Joplin tornado, I nearly made a fool out of myself because I was online saying, look at this supercell. This is the biggest thing I've ever seen. Either Tulsa or Oklahoma City is about to get destroyed. Then all of a
you
sudden,
have to watch out with predictions like that.
Well, then all of a sudden, 5 minutes later, some strange things started happening on the radar and on the satellite. And the storm did something the storm shouldn't be able to do. It stopped moving east and started and took a direct left turn north. As soon as it got north of the metro areas, it took off due east again. And as soon as it got past the very edge of those metro areas near the state border, it dropped the tornado that struck Joplin. Now, there were people all over the internet screaming, did you see that? Did you see how that storm moved? Look at the anomalies on radar. Mm-hmm. Look at the anomalies on satellite. They created that tornado and
they nuked Joplin,
Missouri. When I watched them save those two cities, they directed that thing around the big cities.
Okay, and so how are they doing it and who are the they?
I don't, like I said, I don't know who the they are, but put it this way. It wasn't this past Super Bowl, but the one before that. I don't know if you were watching, but there was a FEMA commercial telling
that was the one, the Seahawks one.
I don't remember. I didn't actually watch it.
I was cheering for the truther coach Pete Carroll, who then became the villain of the most recent Super Bowl, almost as if it was scripted.
Yeah, I wish I could say I followed football as much as I used to, especially because I'm from Pittsburgh. But
I'm a Packer fan, so if I didn't do that, I would have nothing whatsoever in common with many of my neighbors.
Fair enough. But essentially, how much money did they spend to tell billions of people, look, disasters can happen. You need to be prepared. You know all these FEMA camps people are scared of?
Tell me about it. I've been talking with my friend Jim Fetzer about this now. For quite some time.
Do you know how
he thinks we're going to be locked up in the basement of Walmart within a month or two?
Yeah, that's I can't even come close to getting behind that idea, especially not with how many of them are a specific distance away from a coastline in case of a tsunami event. You know, they're not going to come and knock down our doors and bring us out. This was my problem when Alex Jones went nuts on Piers Morgan and said, mm-hmm. it's going to be 1776 if you come try to take our guns. Mm-hmm. I mean, could you imagine if they tried to do this? Unless they got the Chinese army to come ring every doorbell at the same time, there would be bullets flying out of house number two before they got to the doorbell. And it would just be a massive catastrophe. You'd never be able to pull it off, not in the United States.
I don't see how it would further anybody's objectives.
No, and here's the thing. You know as well as I do that not everyone who is awake has love in their heart and has the right mind and would help other people. You know, there are people who, even though they're awake to these things, are still the kind of people that want to take their guns out, go fight someone in a suit or go fight a cop and go loot and riot and take things from other people. And unfortunately, the Walmart basements, the FEMA camps, are for the people who don't know how to be team players when this time comes. If you go out acting a fool, when the chaos happens, you are going to be put away and you deserve.
So basically what you're saying is the chaos is going to be due to this extreme weather that we're expecting.
Could you imagine if some of the things that I described on the other planets were happening here? There'd be tens of millions of people dead already. And what's worse, we haven't even gotten to the second half of this cosmic coincidence yet. You know, the last thing I'll say about this one is back then people were more acclimated to living with this crazy weather. We are not very good at it now. We like our nice cozy homes. We like our electricity. And without it, we don't do very well for the most part as a species. But the second part of this great cosmic coincidence is the fact that and this is not denied. This is what I was talking about before, about all the data coming out from our governments, and not just the United States government and NASA, but the Canadians, the Europeans, the Japanese, the Australians, the Russians, the Chinese. Everyone agrees on these points I'm about to make. The North Pole and the South Pole, the magnetic poles, are in the middle of shifting. And as this is happening, Earth's magnetic field is weakening faster and faster, just as the poles are shifting faster and faster. In the year 2000, NASA published an article stating that from the 19th century, or the 1800s, up to the year 2000, Earth's magnetic field had dropped 10% of its strength. Then, just 5 years later, or I'm sorry, just 10 years later, in 2010, The ESA, the European Space Agency, released their analysis and said that that number was now 15%. And so what took 150 to 200 years before was now going to take only about 20 years. And during that time, as the weakening of our protective magnetic shell was increasing, as it was fading faster and faster, our poles were moving faster and faster. The Europeans sent up a swarm of satellites, actually called the Swarm Mission, to measure Earth's magnetic field. And last year, they confirmed that this weakening trend was continuing, and that some places on Earth were actually weakening a lot faster than others. And when asked why this was happening, the response from the mission manager was that it was happening because the poles are getting ready to flip. We have these two cycles, one on the sun and one on the Earth, that are happening at the exact same time. Now, the mission manager from Swarm reassured everybody and abated anarchy and chaos and fear right after that by saying that they believe that these events take hundreds to thousands of years, and so there's no need to worry. Well, a lot of people were skeptical of that because back in 2000, back in 2010, we got word that the poles were moving at about 60 to 70 kilometers per year. We didn't get a measurement with this latest update at the beginning of 2015, which is a little strange. We should have gotten that update. And so is it the same? Is it a lot faster? Let's just say it's at 60 kilometers per year. Hundreds or thousands of years, that's not going to be one flip. That's going to be a couple of flips, especially if it increases its speed. It's only going to take a couple of decades. If it never increases its speed at all, if it increases at the rate it's been going, we could be looking at a decade or less.
Wait a minute. How many feet per year did you say?
60 to 70 kilometers.
Kilometers. Oh, kilometers. Okay.
Kilometers.
That's quite a shift.
Yeah. And basically, that was up from just a few kilometers per year, three or four, back in the year 1900. So we're looking at something that's happening faster and faster. And
and what's the link between that and the extreme weather events?
Well, the extreme weather events, this is all part of what we started talking about. You know, I'm working on getting some statistical proof of what the 225,000 people who watch our daily show see every day and don't need the statistical proof because they can actually now forecast earthquakes themselves, and they do. But Dr. Kong Papu Yen of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center has been working with me on that and on how and on proving how these same solar phenomena actually trigger storms as well, tropical storms, tornado outbreaks, and the like. And the only thing that is standing between this energy from space and these natural disasters is Earth's magnetic field. So when Earth's magnetic field drops, we get more earthquakes and volcanoes, and they're going to be stronger. We get more tornado outbreaks, more tropical storms, more storms in general, and they're going to be stronger. The high pressure is going to be higher. The low pressure is going to be lower. It's going to be 110 degrees on one side of a low pressure system that's dropping 400 tornadoes a night in the middle while dropping 2 to 3 feet of snow on the western side, and it doesn't care if it's June or January. That's the kind of shift I'm talking about, where it's not about how much sunlight you get in a day. It's about how much space energy your part of the world is exposed to. And unfortunately, it's not just like it can be your part of the world, because this is a global circuit and this thing will shift and go down together. And, you know, let's say you're lucky enough to have nothing happen in your part of the world. You better hope that nothing happens in the rest of the world either that brings down civilization, because when there's no food at the store and no gas at the pump and no electricity because the thing that stopped the sun from blowing out all the power grids is gone as well, you're in a bad situation there. And it's basically going to be a survival-type situation if these trends continue. Now, I have to clarify and put a disclaimer. For all I know, while I'm sitting here talking to you, the Earth and the Sun have decided that they're not going to follow the cycles they have followed since their creation. They're going to break these patterns that have existed since they themselves have existed, and they're just going to go back to normal, and the planet is going to stay nice and happy forever. It's very possible that that's happening. I'm not Jeebus.
Or is it also possible that it could be less extreme than you're suggesting? We might get something a little sort of like what happened around in the 17th century, but you know that didn't stop that from being the key period of French literature, flourishing of French culture, blah, blah,
while
blah.
That was going on, people that looked like you and me got on a bunch of rickety wooden boats and crossed the Atlantic, made a bunch of states over here. Mm-hmm. That was during that time period.
Right.
Stuff happens.
Yeah. So it could be that, you know, what you're describing, you know, 100 degrees plus on either side of a front with zillions of massive tornadoes, that I don't think that happened a whole lot in the
1700s. That is the kind of thing that hasn't been described since the last polar shift. You know, during the last polar shift, which is I and a lot of other of these sort of frontier electric thinking scientists believe is what happened in biblical times. I don't know if you know the story of Moses protecting people from fire serpents, but the device he used to do that looks a lot like Nikola Tesla's patented lightning deflector and lightning protector. And the fire serpents would be like the auroral plasma, the solar wind plasma that creates the northern lights, not having any restriction and coming all the way down to the ground and literally striking people dead, electrifying them and burning them and things like that. These stories are alleged to have taken place. Mm-hmm. This is the kind of stuff where if it is just a solar cycle and the Earth's magnetic field does not reverse, which, by the way, everyone agrees it is overdue for a reversal. If it does not reverse, you're absolutely right. But here's the other thing. Not only does the hundreds or thousands of years to shift timing not make sense when you see how fast the poles are moving, and you just do the math and say, wait a minute, it's not going to take that long for it to flip. It's going to get there much shorter. The best scientists in the world in this field are at Berkeley, and they came out a couple of weeks ago and said, actually, we have evidence that these events can happen in as little as 80 years. Our shift began 100 years ago. We're already on borrowed time. We could shift at any point. Things are happening faster and faster and faster. And if you do the math and extrapolate the rate of increase, we're talking about a decade or less.
Mm-hmm. And now, aside from stories about Moses, is there any kind of archaeological evidence for these massive effects in previous pole shifts?
Yes, there's evidence of the global tsunami and the global flood, both of which can be brought about by this polar shift. There is a new hypothesis that we're working on called star water. Essentially, NASA agrees and has proven that the Earth actually releases oxygen up into space in the direction of the sun as a sort of shield-like reaction when the sun releases an eruption our direction. That eruption is mostly hydrogen meeting our oxygen shield. This same process is how NASA says water is created in the lunar soil and on asteroids. They just haven't said that that same process happens above our heads, even though the oxygen above our heads doesn't need to be broken out of the lunar soil or the asteroid by the hydrogen. It's a perfect mechanism for a super flood if we don't have a magnetic field above our head. Likewise, also, I said that the only thing standing between that space energy and storms and earthquakes being triggered is the magnetic field. If that's not there, the amount of earthquakes and volcanoes that are going off are going to create unbelievable tsunamis. That's the kind of thing that we saw in the past as well. Now, granted, we don't have too much information, you know, accounts of the weather and things like that, and things like an unbelievable windstorm or an unbelievable tornado are not going to be preserved geologically for thousands of years. It's just not going to happen. But you do have things like the global tsunami. We do have evidence of periods of great volcanic and tectonic activity.
That sounds like what everybody was expecting on December 21st, 2012.
Yeah. And that was kind of a double-edged sword because you know, you could look at what was happening on the planet and see that things weren't happening fast enough for there to be doom coming soon. And so it was tough sort of wading through the whole environment when everyone lumped you in with all the other doomsdayers, even though you were constantly telling folks that, look, we've got time. This thing is happening very, very slowly here in terms of the way they were thinking. But essentially, that's, you know, this is where we stand. And, you know,
so this what's the time scale, do you think? I mean, just what's your best guess for, you know, how many years or decades before it becomes overwhelmingly obvious?
You know, that's tough to say. The magnetosphere, if it gets down, you know, to 50% weakened, I don't know what that does to the weather. I don't know if you could even stand outside at noon at that time and be assured that you weren't going to get cancer. I probably wouldn't get on an airplane if I knew that our magnetic field was weakened 50%. There's a really good chance you're going to get a cancer-causing dose of radiation. It's very, very difficult, and I would love to be a prophet and be able to give exact dates and exact timelines that people love so much, that you know, the kind of things that sell books and get you really expensive paid speaking gigs. What I'm really interested in is letting people know that we don't have all the answers, but what we do have are two patterns, one on the sun, one on Earth. For as long as these spheres have existed, we can detect nothing other than these patterns based on all the evidence. And it just so happens that it's looking like within the next couple of years, we're going to see both of these cycles reset. And there's no guarantee it's going to happen. This is just where the patterns are taking us, where the trends are going, what the math says. And that's literally all it is. This is not some kind of message from God. I'm not, you know, boldly proclaiming the world is going to end. But this is the kind of thing. This is the kind of thing that somebody like me sees. This is the kind of thing that you know, you had to pick out this thing that didn't seem like much when you were looking at the big picture, but when you dive deep into it, it turns out that it could be everything. This is the thing where if I missed this when I was doing due diligence in an equity investment, tens of millions of dollars could be wasted. Believe me, searching for truth, sniffing out bull crap amongst all the different theories and this and that online is eons, miles easier than what I was doing when it came to that equity investing. It is very easy to spot how – it's very easy to see how we can have so much evidence of so many things and yet still no one will listen. It's because we allow ourselves to engage in the lunacy sometimes, and we let the people who have the craziest ideas have the loudest bullhorns, and we will fall for a trap if it is perfectly handed to us on a silver platter, like HAARP was. And, you know, the moment we heard the word HAARP, they had moved on, probably twice. You know, there was actually a lot of arguments about whether or not the dual polar NEXRAD radar system should ever be put in place. If you go and you look at the actual discussions and some of the papers that were written before they ever put that in, there was concern and some suggestions that they never put it in because it would cause confusion amongst meteorologists and the public, because in order to detect the rain and the tornadoes and everything 50 times better than they used to be able to do, which is what they're able to do, they had to put out a wave that might excite certain layers and certain areas of moisture that looked like they were giant bullseyes in the middle of the world. They would create shapes because that's what electricity does.
It sounds a lot like the Heisenberg principle that, you know, if you look, that photon that you use to look is going to have an effect on what you're looking at. Ben, I think we're at the end of our hour, unfortunately, because there's a lot left I'd like to hear in terms of details. We're going to have you back on before too long.
Yeah, well, you know, the issue, mostly, if there's going to be one takeaway, and I would definitely love to come back, but the issue, the takeaway right now is that there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes to both try to mitigate and cover up just how serious it was. They can't come out and tell you the poles are shifting or that the sun is changing the entire solar system. You can only discover this if you go do the homework for yourselves, because the headlines are never going to tell it to you.
Okay, good place to start the research journey is suspiciousobservers.org. That O in observers, is that a zero?
Yes, but I actually got suspiciousobservers with an O.org as well. So that's
okay. Either way, suspiciousobservers.org. Well, thank you, Ben Davidson. It's fascinating stuff. I do want to learn more. Looking forward to our next conversation.
Very much a pleasure, Kevin. Thank you.
All right, take care.